LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
For season two of Parklandia, there are a lot of firsts we're excited about. From the first guest interviews to the first time we called 911 from a national park, of course. And today is another first. It's our first time covering an urban park.
And of course, there's no better place to mark our first urban park than Washington, D.C. It's a city filled with more national park sites than most states have.
Yeah, plus the city itself is just so rich with history and culture, and the omnipresence of memorials and historic sites is inescapable. So if you're looking to come to D.C. and just have a chill, history-free day, you'll probably lose your mind.
Yeah, but really, why would you come here and not at least do a little bit of history?
Yeah.
It's so much fun. It's not the, like, boring school trip typey stuff that a lot of people remember.
Yeah. And that's definitely how I remembered it mainly at first, from when I first came here in middle school or, like, whatever grade that was. But my disinterest with D.C. at the time may have also been due to the fact that I had no friends during that phase of my life. So it was just me, like, this lonely, sad child wandering around memorials.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, we were able to go together this time, and I'm happy to be your friend.
Thanks. And we were able to take lots of cute selfies together, too, that looked like you and I were part of some sort of Olsen twin-type direct-to-DVD movie or something. Like, probably had, it would have, like, these cute names, like A Day in D.C. or District Dudes or something like that. D.C. Dudes.
Let's
DC
leave that duo. Imagining I'm sorry, for I'm another going podcast. Crazy. Like, stop this. today we need to really focus on this incredible legacy of national park sites in Washington, D.C., from the National Mall to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial and beyond.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia, a production of iHeartRadio.
We sold our loft in Chicago, moved into an RV, and now we're traveling the country full-time with our dog, Finn, exploring America's national parks. And today, we're talking all about Washington, D.C., the National Mall, and Memorial Parks.
So our trip to D.C. was another stop along the event trail that I was working on earlier with Burton's Maplewood Farm. So like every week or two, there'd be a different craft market along the mid-Atlantic coast. So we spent a couple of months visiting places like Maryland, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia. And one of those events was in Virginia in the suburbs of D.C. So it was the perfect excuse to get here early and spend some time in the capital city.
Perfect excuse. And I was seriously very excited. D.C. is just one of those cities that has really interested me for a while, and I've been wanting to go. So the timing and location of your work schedule just really worked out. And I've always had an inkling that I would like D.C., I think, which is also somewhat torturous because it's one of those cities I could never afford to live in. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean,
great to visit, though.
It's really a great city. Of all the big cities we've been to since living on the road, it's definitely one of our favorites. And I try not to use favorites anymore because there's so many wonderful places in this country. But I'll make an exception because it literally is one of our favorites. It's the perfect mix of a big city with culture and neighborhoods without feeling as busy and overwhelming as places like New York or San Francisco.
Yeah, I think a big part of the reason why I like it so much is D.C. kind of reminds me of Chicago in that way. Like, Chicago's a huge city, but it still feels relatively calm and accessible, at least when you compare it to those other places like New York or San Francisco. And it's not, like, as dizzying as those types of cities. That's probably why we lived in Chicago for so long, because we felt that way, and why I'm constantly drawn back there. That and Chicago's incredible coffee scene, and its burgers, and its rooftop bars, and
long
its tiki
story
bars.
Short.
Yeah.
We miss Chicago. Mm-hmm. We really do. And we crave cities like this. So D.C. was a way to satisfy that craving.
Yeah.
It was an emotional time because going to see the history of that city, but also just going into the city.
Right.
For this trip, we didn't drive our RV in, of course, because it's D.C. And there's a ton of traffic. I mean, it's crazy. And parking a 26-foot RV would have been a nightmare, expensive, and if at all even possible.
Yeah, I don't know that it would have been. And the traffic here is really no joke. I feel like I could totally speed walk faster than most of the cars in traffic, trying to get into the city especially. Granted, I do speed walk faster than, like, Sonic the Hedgehog, but you get the gist. Like, it's tedious traffic here.
It really is. And that's why we took advantage of D.C.'s public transit to get in and out of the city, which was awesome. It's another reason why we really love cities, because when you're on the transit like this, it's much easier to get around, but also, like, there's this beautiful mix of culture. When you're on the transit in big cities, you get to see who's living there, who's cohabitating, who's, like, the different personalities of that city. And I feel like their transit was just very diverse, and it was a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, much more so than just, like, suit and tie politicians and stuff like that. There were a lot of people going in and out of D.C. when we were. And so not only is it a great option and economical option for traveling, but it's nice to be around then and see that, especially since we've been removed from Chicago for several months at this point. And it was a nice reminder of being like, oh, this is a great asset of urban living and visiting urban places as well. Because at the time when we were visiting D.C., we were initially staying at some huge and kind of fancy RV park and campground on the Maryland side of the city. And conveniently, there was a bus stop literally right at the entrance of our RV park. So what we were able to do was just get up early in the morning, catch the bus, take that to the nearest train stop, which only took like 10 or 15 minutes, and then just hop on the train and go into town. It was super easy.
Yeah, it was really just a few stops on the train to get to D.C., and it was super smooth and quick. And that's one thing, like, us being from Chicago, we understand how to use transit. So for a lot of people, this might be confusing.
Sure.
For your first time. So, you know, it's just about, like, you're like, oh my gosh, I have to take a bus to a train to then, like, walk around or take an Uber or Lyft. It's really not that. Make it a journey. Make it about the journey while you're doing this because it really is easy and it's fun. And again, you get to see the diversity in that culture.
It is really fun.
Yeah.
And you don't have to stress about parking and stuff like that. That would drive me nuts. I can't do that.
And it's, like, super smooth and it's really clean and cheap.
Yeah, I know all of it. And I feel like D.C.'s public transit has that part over Chicago in a little bit. Like, I love the transit options when we're at home. But the L in Chicago is nowhere near as smooth and clean as D.C.'s trains.
Food.
Yeah, for our first stop in D.C., we needed to fuel up for the day of exploring and touring. So we made our way to the D.C. location of Milk Bar. Because, of course.
Oh, my God. We love Milk Bar. And we're truly obsessed with it. So Milk Bar is a New York City-based mini chain of, like, dessert shops from this famous pastry chef, Christina Tosi. And she developed this reputation for these beautiful, whimsical, kind of quirky desserts. So she's known for things like cereal milk soft serve ice cream and cornflake cookies and, like, cake truffles, stuff like that. So
the cookies are literally the best. And that cereal milk soft serve in Las Vegas, she does, like, a cereal milk boozy
thing.
Cocktail thing.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I had to jump over there.
But love it.
But we really got into them when we were in Las Vegas last year, and we went into their location at the Cosmopolitan probably half dozen times for cookies and those boozy lattes.
We went a lot. Yeah, the boozy lattes. And it's great, too, because it's like you have this cereal milk flavor, which is like so nostalgic and it's like childhood. But then you can also get a boozy. So it's like pouring like vodka all over childhood memories. It's really, really nice.
Yeah.
Kind of fun. And I, yeah, just talking about it now, like I miss them dearly, those Milk Bar cookies especially. Wish we had them.
I do too.
Immediately.
Yeah. So they have a few locations in D.C. though, which is beautiful. But Milwaukee, we went to the D.C. one in the city center location since it's like so central and right next to all the main historic sites and attractions where we'd be wanting to see. So, you know, it's just like 3 blocks from the train stop. I mean, it was literally perfection of where it was located.
Yeah, it would have been silly not to go, honestly. Like, we needed to. It was preordained. I think I had one of my beloved cereal milk lattes. There was no booze.
Check.
But, you know, got that. And then I probably had a corn cookie, which is my favorite cookie from Milk Bar. And
check, check.
I just love having cookies like this for breakfast, or cookies in general. It's a great breakfast food.
Museum.
You know, I think we first tried to go to the National Portrait Gallery because we wanted to see the new President Obama and Michelle Obama portraits. But the gallery wasn't open until later in the day, so we just kept on walking and exploring, which was kind of a bummer.
Sure. Yeah, that was a bit of a bummer. And, you know, we weren't able to see that one this time. But it was the perfect day for walking and exploring. It was probably like mid to late March at this point. So it was still chilly and we had light coats on, but it was sunny and comfortable for walking especially. And things warmed up into the afternoon. So at this point, we decided to make our way to the U.S. Capitol building since neither of us have ever been. And my main memory of this building is seeing it blown up in Independence Day. So I figured it was time to make new memories, ones that aren't so destructive.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Wasn't on the way there, didn't we pass where Lincoln was assassinated?
Oh, yeah, the Ford's Theater.
Cannot skip the Ford's Theater.
Yeah, except we kind of did.
Yeah, I know. But yes, we did again. Like, gosh, we skipped a lot of great
things.
Well,
there's a lot.
There's tons.
We saw a lot, but we also skipped a lot.
It's absolutely packed all the way right through it.
Yeah.
But back with the U.S. Capitol, you know, that's right up there with the White House and the Washington Monument as one of the most iconic buildings in D.C. And it really was the only one we were able to book a tour at.
Right. Yeah, because that stuff's not the easiest. Like, didn't you try to, like, book a tour for the White House initially? But it was, like, probably too last minute and they didn't have availability or something.
Yeah, you need to email your state senator to set it up. For both of these.
But you
can do this one as a walk-in as well.
The Capitol building?
The Capitol building. Okay. But the White House, you have to do like way in advance.
Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised at all that one's difficult to do. But like the state senator thing seems so like unnecessarily
official.
Difficult. Yeah, unofficial. Like isn't that kind of shouldn't they be doing other things? Like I'm sure they're busy.
Well, what I think it is they're trying to educate people on who their senators are because a lot of people still don't vote. They still don't,
right.
Like,
so they're kind of forcing
know
you to
how to contact
their
senator,
yourself.
And yeah. They don't realize, like, you're supposed to have this direct window to them. So it's like this education
okay.
thing.
I can respect that.
Yeah.
So you did that. You emailed our, like, Illinois senator?
Absolutely. Okay. But I'm really just glad we got to get into the Capitol building and it all worked out because it was an epic experience. In case you need a refresher, it's a huge dome-topped building at the eastern end of the National Mall.
Right. It's impossible to miss. It's a huge building looming over the whole park, the entire city. And it's a super important building, obviously. It's basically like if you think of D.C. as kind of the circulatory system, this would be the aorta of D.C., it's home to the U.S. Congress, plus the seat of the legislative branch of government, and it's the center of the city's 4 geographic quadrants and numbered streets. So it's really central in more ways than one here, every way.
So for some background here, the Capitol building was built way back in the 1800s, and it was expanded in later years with the iconic dome and extra chambers. But an important fact is it was made mostly by slavery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we learned that in the tour.
We definitely did.
The architectural style is neoclassical, which makes sense because it totally looks like something from ancient Europe. It's very distinct among any U.S. building in general, especially since it's like all pristine white. So it's almost just like glowing from the end of the National Mall here. It's magnificent looking.
Yeah, it was actually like Alexander like Hamilton who helped establish D.C. as the nation's capital. It's to create more of a neutral location so that no single state would have more influence or power over the federal government.
Yeah.
And that's why D.C. Yeah. is the District of Columbia.
That's how we got here. And cool to know a Broadway star helps solidify our country's capital.
Pop quiz.
Okay.
Is Washington, D.C. a state?
No.
Exactly. I know that this sounds silly, but a lot of people still don't know that Washington, D.C. is not a state or within a state.
Oh.
They think it's owned by a state, but it is its own district.
Right. Like, I could see people thinking it's part of, like, Virginia or Maryland, right? It's, like,
right?
Literally,
it's
like,
easy.
In
it's
it.
So yeah. easy. You're like, oh, that's just a district of it. But it's not.
Yeah. So, and this part I love, and I probably knew this at some point, but my memory is foggy. But Philadelphia was actually our temporary capital while the city, while D.C. was being planned and built along the Potomac River. So it's been quite a saga for the city and our country in general.
Yeah. I mean, the really cool part about building this new city from scratch was how city planners were able to lay it out with a specific vision in mind. The president's house was intentionally like connected west to the Potomac by a public space that would come to be known as the National Mall.
Yeah, and eventually that public space would grow and expand to include and connect the Capitol Building, the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, the Smithsonian Museums, and a slew of other important sites, National Park and otherwise.
Also, the Capitol Building was initially called Congress House, but Thomas Jefferson wanted to change the name, inspired by the Latin origins of the word and its connection to Capitoline Hill in Rome.
Yeah, right. So the tour we did here was excellent. It was a pretty sizable group, I would say, and we were all led around the interior of the building into numerous chambers, learning about the construction of the building, how it was partly burned and damaged during the War of 1812, and how the building was expanded in the mid-1800s to accommodate the House of Representatives and the Senate. Since the country was growing and adding more states, they were running out of room for all the new legislators, so it was literally a full house.
This was also when the new dome was added, like a cherry on the top of a sundae.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm still starving from a milk bar chat, so these food references are kind of torturous for me to handle, but I do like it.
Yeah, so if the dome is the cherry, then the Statue of Freedom on the top of the dome would be the chocolate drizzle or the whipped cream.
Or the sprinkles or the, like, jimmies, chocolate jimmies.
Kill
rainbow
me.
Jimmies, yeah. But yes to all of it. It's the statue is actually an ornate bronze statue of a woman with a military helmet holding a sword and shield. So she's basically like a badass Statue of Liberty.
Now, after years and years of restorations and add-ons, the Capitol Building was named a National Historic Landmark by the National Park Service in 1960. And rightfully so.
Yeah, rightfully so. So my favorite thing about our tour here was seeing all the different states that were so well represented. I felt such a sense of unity, and especially important during a time when our country really needs that feeling, that unity. The tour started in a small round room with statues of important pioneering figures from the original 13 colonies, including my home state of New Hampshire. Nice to see that.
Yes, this area was called the Crypt, creepily enough. It was filled with columns and had statues of people like Samuel Adams from Massachusetts, Charles Carroll from Maryland, and Roger Sherman from Connecticut.
Yes, and New Hampshire was wrapped by John Stark. Actually, each state has its own statue somewhere in the building. Some of them have more than one. So it's not just the Crypt, and it's not just the 13 colonies. Statues can be found in the Visitor Center, the National Statuary Hall, Connecting Corridors, and the Hall of Columns also has statues.
Yeah, I think the Statuary Hall is my favorite. It's a huge room with a tall ceiling filled with these beautiful statues from across the country. And the tour guide was really on it with his, like, information. He would ask people in the crowd to say where they're from, and he would immediately point to the statue in the room and talk about that person and their role in history.
The tour guide was on it.
Yeah,
he
and
knew
another
his stuff.
Really cool thing about, like, Statuary Hall is that, like, that is where, like, Congress collected for a long time until they outgrew it. But it wasn't
right.
Like the modern day, like, basically, the game, it was a full house. It's packed.
Full house.
But I think every state can have up to two statues, and they're donated by your state. And like,
beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Good teamwork.
So states can change who their important characters are if they want to
That's
in
true.
The future. So it's just such a, it's really, there's a really cool
right.
piece. There's so a
like,
lot
yeah.
to unpack there.
If you want to honor someone new or, you know, swap things out or if someone being honored turns out to be, you know, awful, if they haven't aged well in history, then swap that out.
Yeah.
On another note, on our way into this hall, we also passed by Nancy Pelosi's office, which was a total surprise to me. I didn't know her office was here, so I wasn't expecting to see it. We didn't see her, but we saw her office. And it reminded me of a dream I recently had with Nancy in it. Did I tell you about this dream?
No, I don't think so.
So I dreamed that she invited me to her office for some sort of meeting. I guess I just envisioned this is what her office would look like. It kind of felt like an elementary school principal's office or something. I don't know if that's how it actually is. But she invited me into her office for a meeting. And then we didn't really talk about business, but she did pour me some red wine in like a paper cup. And I was like, Nancy, she's cool. I like her. And then I don't know what we talked about, or if anything, but the meeting was pretty much over, like, right away. She did hug me goodbye, though, so I woke up feeling great.
And that is amazing. I love it.
I'm a dreamer.
You have some weird dreams. But that's one that doesn't seem too far off to maybe what would happen. I just think that Nancy is
maybe she would do that
more
for real.
Classy than a paper cup. Like, I think she would give you a...
That's the unbelievable part. That's really the only unbelievable part of that dream is, like, paper cup. She probably has, like, stemware.
Absolutely. And when we come back from this short break, we'll get back to reality with more from our trip to Washington, D.C.'s national park sites.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today we're talking about Washington, D.C., the National Mall, and all the memorial parks that we visited in the city.
Monument.
So, like we mentioned, D.C. has a ton of national park sites, many of which are well-known and popular, along with others that are less visited. In addition to the Capitol Building and the National Mall itself, which serves as a grand public connector to all of it, the other national parks we visited were the Lincoln Memorial, Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, President's Park, a.k.a. the White House, the Thomas Jefferson Memorial, and Pennsylvania Avenue, which is considered a national park site in and of itself.
Like we said, there's a lot here. And we also stopped at the Washington Monument, but we weren't able to go into it or to the top of it because it was closed for renovations. It has since reopened, so it's a bummer we missed it, but you do not have to.
Right. Yeah, it was a bummer. We did go into like the little visitor center store, though, and preach that for a little bit. But we'll just have to go back, which I'm totally fine with, because that means more milk bar cookies and more American history. So sign me up.
The great thing about how D.C. is laid out is that the National Mall makes it super easy to get from one site to the next.
Yeah. Do you remember when you mixed up the National Mall with the Mall of America?
I don't really want to.
How dare you?
Throw me under the bus here.
We're wandering from one side to the other.
No,
you're like,
milk bar cookies for you.
You were like, where's the roller coaster? And I'm like, what?
No. I did. Don't. Like, oh, you're horrible for bringing that up while we're recording.
It was my favorite thing.
And I have nothing to say except utter embarrassment.
Honestly, though, I feel like, in all fairness, that probably is an easy thing to confuse because the names are super similar. They're basically like synonymous names, even though, like, in actuality, the two places could not be more different. They represent entirely different things.
They really do.
I love them both. Sorry.
Yeah, but,
you
do too.
You know?
Anyway, thanks for embarrassing me there. Our first stop after eating lunch at the U.S. Capitol building was the National Archives Museum to see the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights.
Yes, and I was so excited to go there, and I'm so excited to talk about it because this is the part of the episode where I begin to talk pretty much nonstop about my favorite movie of all time, National Treasure. As you remember...
All day.
It took place in, like, most of the movie took place in D.C. Nicolas Cage, epic, you know, epic adventure. And I was thinking about while we're in D.C., of course, especially the National Archives.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense because, like, Nicolas Cage tried to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't try. He succeeded, which would be probably more impressive and honorable if that wasn't, like, a heinous crime, like a horrible thing to do. But honestly, after visiting the archives, I'm starting to think that movie was a wee bit fantastical and unrealistic.
Are you really now just realizing that?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, like, National Park was as accurate as maybe a documentary. Like, all these things were laid out. Their plans were laid out. And Nicolas Cage would run, you know, through his itinerary of, like, and I'm like, okay, I have no reason not to buy this. But then again, I'm also the type of person who thinks, like, Jurassic Park seems viable. Like, if they were to do that with mosquitoes today, like,
next you're going to tell me that the Meg is the same thing?
I thought, yeah. I mean, that movie about the giant shark at the bottom of the ocean and how they, like, broke through this, what was that, like a frozen layer, like a freezing layer, and there was, like, a megalodon down there. Like, they explained it in the movie, and I'm like, okay, I'm in. Like, this seems, maybe we should actually explore this.
Yeah. You just love those documentaries.
Yes,
huh?
Documentaries with quotes around them, yeah.
I think it's safe to say that no one would be able to steal the Declaration of Independence, not even Nicolas Cage. This thing was on heavy lockdown and guarded by several staffers, and they don't even let you take photos of it with your phone, yeah. Let alone anyone
right.
steal with it.
Yeah, that's true. I've never seen anything this guarded, and even though photos weren't allowed, it was still really, really cool to spend a few minutes with it, just... trying to read it in the dark room. It's hard to see because the ink is so faded and it's all fancy calligraphy that my eyes are not able to decipher.
Yeah, same thing with the Bill of Rights. A lot of cursive,
fancy
which
cursive.
We do know how to write in cursive.
I mean,
but they're hundreds of years old, so it's the big fancy cursive.
Big fancy
and cursive. It's something that we don't read like that anymore. It's a lost art. Both of these documents are in the rotunda section of the building, which is kept mostly dark and chilly to help preserve them.
Yeah. Another neat thing here is the Faulkner murals, these enormous oil-on-canvas works created by Barry Faulkner in 1935 and 1936. They are depicting a fictional scene of the presentation of the Declaration of Independence and Constitution, and it's extraordinary. It's this huge mural, just gorgeous, and it's perfectly
stunning.
Fitting in here.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning. After this, we continue down to the National Mall, which is the most iconic memorial in the city, the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's the most iconic. Like after, of course, like the White House and whatnot,
I don't know. I mean, I just...
Mm. I mean, I like mm-hmm. it better. Yeah,
I guess White House, Lincoln Memorial, those two can go get tossed up. There's nothing that's really going to beat those two.
No. And do you remember that scene in National Treasure when Nicolas Cage is sitting on the steps of the memorial, like, talking with his sidekick? His sidekick's name was Riley. I don't remember, like, what that actor's name is in real life, but it's iconic. Although, in the movie, the craziest part about that scene was when they were there at the memorial, they pretty much had it to themselves somehow. Like, nobody was around, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Maybe that's the point when you should have realized that the movie was not a documentary.
I mean, that was the most unrealistic part of that movie.
One thing I will agree, though, is that the Lincoln Memorial is definitely a national treasure.
It is a national treasure. Like we talked about in our Gettysburg episode, we are big fans of Abe Lincoln. He was the Beyonce of Gettysburg, and he's the Beyonce of D.C., too.
Absolutely. The memorial is such a special place with this giant statue inside of like this Greek Doric temple overlooking the mall. And speaking of Gettysburg, that speech is inscribed along one of the interior walls, along with his like second inaugural address.
Yeah. So the memorial was officially dedicated in 1922, designed by architect Henry Bacon, Daniel Chester French, and carved by the Piccirilli brothers. Jules Guérin painted the murals on the inside. So good job, team. Everybody pulled it together.
Ever since its creation, it's just been this endless source of inspiration, not only for us mm-hmm. and for the visitors today, but for people like Martin Luther King Jr., who gave his famous I Have a Dream speech in front. In addition to being a national park site of its own right, the memorial was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1966.
Yeah, and when we said it was popular, we were not kidding. The Lincoln Memorial alone gets more than 7 million annual visitors. But despite these almost constant crowds, it's still somehow like a very peaceful feeling place of reflection. It's nice and quiet inside, so you can drink it all in and admire the work and the subject that inspired it.
Yeah, and speaking of Martin Luther King Jr., that's another memorial we made sure to visit. Like most things on and around the National Mall, it's nearby.
Yes, it's in West Potomac Park, and the main attraction here at this memorial is the intricate granite statue of Martin Luther King Jr., which was carved by Li Yixin, who drew inspiration from the memorial by the I Have a Dream speech he gave nearby.
Right. The statue is actually called the Stone of Hope, which is part of a line from that speech when he said, "Out of the mountain of despair, a stone of hope." Mm. It's a really deep, and it's a definitely still resonates today as like civil rights are still a huge issue in this country.
Sadly true, yes. But the civil rights movement was such an important turning point for the country, and we're all so much better off thanks to Martin Luther King Jr.'s bravery and leadership. The memorial is one of the newer additions in D.C. since it opened in 2011, and it's overlooking the Tidal Basin, so it's got a gorgeous location and gorgeous scenery.
Another, like, amazing slash, like, crazy thing is that the memorial is still, or was, the first African-American memorial on the National Mall. Most of them are presidents, and this is only the fourth memorial that's not a president.
Yeah, and honestly, if anyone deserves to be memorialized, it's Martin Luther King Jr.
Another one of those presidents who have been memorialized is Thomas Jefferson, who had his own famous memorial just southeast of the Martin Luther King Jr. one across the Tidal Basin.
When we visited, it was just at the very early beginning of cherry blossom season, so these bright pink florals were starting to bloom a little bit on the trees around the Tidal Basin, which made for a very pretty walk from memorial to memorial. Got a little sneak peek of that.
Yeah, this is just another beautiful structure, almost totally surrounded by the serenity of the Tidal Basin. It's a neoclassical building with a bronze statue of Thomas Jefferson in the middle under the huge dome.
Love it. It was designed by John Russell Pope and built by John McShane, finished in 1943, and the statue was added in 1947. It's right up there with the Lincoln Memorial and Washington Monument as one of the most visited sites in town, with more than 2 million annual visitors. This is another site I remember visiting in middle school, actually, probably by myself. I mean, like, the rest of, they were somewhere there, but I was, like, you know, alone.
Well, think of it this way. You were probably able to focus more and appreciate the details better.
Yeah, you mean without the distractions of friendship? Sure.
So the other memorials we visited in and around the mall were more war-focused. The Vietnam Veterans Memorial and the World War II Memorial.
Naturally, these were especially somber destinations, but so beautiful and inspiring nonetheless.
Yeah, the Vietnam's Memorial is really close to the Lincoln Memorial. It's a 2-acre structure designed to honor U.S. Armed Forces who fought and died or went missing in Vietnam War. The one thing that really hits me the hardest is when I see families going there with their paper and chalk or their pencils, and they're outlining the name of their loved one. A lot of people do this so they can bring it home, and it's that, like, keepsake for them. But just knowing a lot of people who served, especially during the Vietnam War, it's, you know, for those who died, it's really hard, but also those who have survived. And so for me, when I hit this, it just hit me in a full circle because it was just like from my time in the Marines and just realizing what it was that these people sacrificed, that just really hit me extremely hard.
I know. It's a very impactful place, very somber. And, I mean, that's heart-wrenching to see. And we saw there was a lot of people there. And the main part of the memorial is the memorial wall, which consists of these two long black granite walls with a walkway that runs the entire length. And these walls are etched with more than 58,000 names of service members from the war. many of which had flowers and cards and other sentimental items placed on the ground when we visited. I think there was actually like a school field trip happening, or probably more than one. And students were writing letters to service members, I think. It was so sweet. And again, heart-wrenching.
It was. And an absolute, like, it was just one of those inspiring moments where, like, it's nice when they have a space to leave those letters of thanks, you know.
Right.
The main part of this memorial was finished in 1982, and today it attracts about 3 million annual visitors. There are two other parts of the memorial as well. The bronze three soldier statue at the and the Vietnam's Women's Memorial, which honors the nurses who served during the war.
Yeah, it depicts three women with an injured shoulder, and it's powerful stuff. Then also nearby, speaking of more powerful stuff, is the World War II Memorial, which is dedicated to American service members and civilians who died during the Second World War.
This one is really big and central. It has 56 large pillars and a fountain. And it gets about 4.6 million annual visitors, which is really incredible since it's only been open since 2004.
Yeah, those pillars are really stunning. It's this striking series of 17-foot-tall granite pillars in a circular shape around this central plaza with 43-foot arches on either side, one for the Atlantic and one for the Pacific. Each pillar stands for a different U.S. state, plus D.C., the Commonwealth of the Philippines, Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoa, and the U.S. Virgin Islands.
When we come back, we'll explore more of D.C., from the Smithsonian to one of the city's most historic restaurants.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today's episode is all about Washington, D.C., the National Mall, the Lincoln Memorial, and so much more.
Park.
So even though we weren't able to tour the White House, we were at least able to stroll along President's Park, which is overseen by the National Park Service and is part of the National Register of Historic Places, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, Lafayette Square is the main part of the park. It's just shy of 7 acres of public park space that has been used for a variety of different things over the past century, including a graveyard, a zoo, and a slave market.
Yeah, so it definitely had a pretty dark past. Today, it's pristine and peaceful with incredible views of the most iconic mansion in the country. The south part of the park is called the Ellipse. It's a 52-acre lawn that's open to the public for leisurely meandering. And also serves as the site of annual events like the White House Easter Egg Roll and the Christmas Pageant of Peace.
We weren't able to do much here other than marvel at all of our beautiful spaces in mm-hmm. public lands. And I did ride one of those little, like, urban scooters around for a while, which you didn't want me to.
No, you pretty much begged me to. You wanted to ride them together, and I'd rather walk. Plus, I was mostly scared of, like, crashing into something, like a car head-on or just a big group of people. There was a lot of activity, like, buzzing around me, so I'm more comfortable, like, I'm in 2 feet.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's true.
So it's a very walkable city anyway, too, so.
More food.
Yeah, and we're also able to walk a block away from just the Old Epic Grill, which is the oldest restaurant in the whole city.
I know, yeah.
First established in 1856.
That is crazy, especially when you think about how, like, merciless and tough the restaurant business is nowadays. It's difficult for, like, restaurants to even stay open for, like, a decade, let alone, like, more than 100 years.
Well, they stay on top of it. I mean, they're very innovative, and they, like, their cocktails are very updated.
It doesn't feel dated.
Like, yeah, it's not like you're still getting muddled old-fashioned or something like that.
No. There was an interesting combo of, like, freshness here. It still felt, like, fresh and clean and new, but also clearly very vintage and classic in a sleek way. So
exactly.
It's ideal.
Yeah, it's always really great to seek out these historic restaurants and bars whenever we're in a different city. Not only do they feel historic and super unique, but the recipes are total originals, and they taste like the culture of that city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. So we started pretty early. We went for, like, an early bit dinner at, like, 5 or even a little bit earlier. I think we got to the bar area first at around 4:45 or so, and loved the bar area. It's this rustic, like, wood-filled space where we had oysters, right? We had oysters and cocktails, mm-hmm. and the cocktails were so good and fittingly strong, which I always enjoy. I think we had things like blood orange Negroni for me, probably.
And the Irish Old Fashioned for me.
Did you have that? Yeah. So it's basically like a regular Old Fashioned, but with Irish whiskey, which sounds great. And I'm surprised I don't see that more regularly.
Yeah, and it's like literally a place that the bartenders and servers have been for a long time. Like, you could just clearly see it because they're passionate about their jobs. They know the menus like the back of their hands.
But
they're staying up with, like, current qualities, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's just the beauty thing. That's why it's stayed around so long.
Yeah, right. They're clearly passionate and, like, very, very good at this. And it's wonderful. Plus, everyone who works here is super dapper and buttoned up, but, like, in a fun, still kind of casual way. It doesn't feel stodgy or anything like that. It's perfect. So the main dining room where we went after drinks is kind of this expansive, opulent space that's bustling and lively without feeling too fussy, doesn't feel too fancy. It's kind of perfect. And then after our drinks at the bar, this is where we met a couple of my friends who live in D.C. and had an early bird dinner. So as you can see, I have friends now.
That's good, especially since this is the type of restaurant that's best enjoyed with a small group. The menu is just fun to explore and try different things.
Yeah, it definitely is. So we met up with my friend Lauren, who I actually went to high school with back in New Hampshire. She now lives in D.C., and I'm insanely jealous. And we met her and her fiancé, Nick, who I had met once before in Chicago. They're a great couple and super fun to hang out with.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't go to D.C. in high school. That would have been great because then you would have actually had friends.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
That might have been rude. But the food there was solid. They have things like jumbo lump crab cakes and trout parmesan and pan-seared scallops. They had that crispy roasted chicken and meatloaf. I love meatloaf.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you make me, so mm-hmm. I really love it. But it's all very American, which is perfect for such a classic restaurant in America's capital city next to mm-hmm. the White House.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it is perfect. These quintessential American recipes in one of the oldest restaurants in the country, like literally smack dab in the middle of America's capital. It's all just
beautiful.
Ideal, yeah. And then speaking of all American, we also went to a couple of Smithsonian museums, of course. Cannot go to D.C. and not do that, especially because they're all free, which is phenomenal. It's one of my favorite things about D.C., all these iconic museums. And we started with the National Museum of American History. Fantastic.
Yeah.
It was great. And we saw things like the Ruby Slippers, the Batmobile, and then tons of other, like, quintessential American things from history, like everything from Oprah to D-Day.
Yeah, we really wanted to see this movie. They were playing about national parks, which would have been Perfect. Yeah. P-E-R-F-E-C-T. Perfect.
Yes. All caps.
But the theater was closed for an event or something. I think it was just like,
I know.
Do you know who we are?
Like
no, I'm kidding.
Let us in. Special screening. But regardless of that, we definitely still had fun and also went to the newest Smithsonian Museum, the National Museum of African American History and Culture, which was utterly incredible and also a very moving place.
Like, super.
Yeah, really felt it.
Yeah, because that one only opened up just in 2016, mm-hmm. and it's right next to the Washington Monument. It's hard to believe it took this long for a museum dedicated to African American history, but I'm sure glad it's here now.
Yeah.
It's clearly super popular and super special. It's first full year of being open, it was already the fourth most visited of all Smithsonian museums.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I just love that.
So that just tells you how important it is
to
how many people across the world, mm-hmm. let alone just the United States.
Yeah, truly. And also fittingly, this museum is massive, literally like enormous. This building has like 10 stories, five of which are underground, and it totals 350,000 square feet. The main crux of the museum is this long, incredible tour of the slavery history galleries in the concourse. It's all a timeline, starting in 1400 and kind of meanders forward, depicting things like the transatlantic slave trade and King Cotton, the Civil War, all the way through the Jim Crow era, segregated rail cars that you can go on, and the Civil Rights Movement. Heads up that some of the galleries and content here is quite graphic and potentially unsettling. And they have signs, like in red, warning about them ahead of time before entering these specific spaces as trigger warnings, particularly with stuff relating to the KKK and lynching, which is unsurprisingly pretty graphic and hard to see.
Yeah, it's definitely brutal, but it's an important part of history. In addition to these galleries, there are other areas celebrating African-American history in film, music, sports, and TV, plus a great museum store and a sweet home cafe, mm-hmm. With dishes inspired by the Creole Coast in the South, the Western Range, and beyond.
My favorite.
All right. Now it's the time of the episode where we share our favorite parts of DC and its national park sites. We haven't told each other our answers, so it's all a surprise. Mm. Matt, what was your favorite part of Washington, D.C. and the national park systems?
That's a fantastic question. I would say my favorite part was probably the National Archives, because seeing the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence is probably one of the most, like, Americana things I've maybe ever done. And also, directly ties into my favorite movie, National Treasure. So that plays a big part in that decision.
Yeah.
But we were only there for a few minutes, really, in the rotunda, like looking at these documents. But you are so immersed in it in every way. It's like a dark space. It's chilly. So it's basically got its own environment. And it was really, really cool. Skimming over a little bit, I couldn't read most of it, but the impact of these documents is profound.
I
absolutely loved that. So I'm glad that we're able to do that. What about you? What was your favorite part
of DC? That is a very tough question, but I would have to say the Lincoln Memorial. There's just so much history to contemplate there. There's so many lessons in life. Being on the road and just seeing these different memorials and these sites that impact us as like a culture, as a single culture, and within the multiple cultures of the United States, and trying to figure it out. And I think that's the one thing that like Abraham Lincoln means to me is like he realized that we're all individuals. We have our individual cultures, but we have an American culture as well. And bringing people together was his mission.
Yeah.
And it's his legacy.
Yeah.
It is his legacy. And so that's really what it is to me. A little bit. There's more to like process and go over there, but I just really love everything that Abraham Lincoln was about and figuring it out.
Yeah. And it's also cool because that legacy and his whole ethos is really living on today. As you can see, the Lincoln Memorial gets 7 million annual visitors. That's a ton It's like one of the most visited places in D.C. and swarming with people. We were there and people from all walks of life, from all over the world, presumably, are there mingling together and absorbing this experience. And that was amazing. And I also love how, in spite of how crowded it was, while you're inside the actual memorial, everyone is quiet and respectful of that. And there are signs that say, like, you know, please be respectful and quiet while you're in here, et cetera. And everyone is very well behaved, you know?
Yeah, and they are.
Yeah, and also the view from up there is just the best. You're, like, up this long series of steps and overlooking the reflecting pool, the Washington Monument. It's probably the best view in, like, the whole city, I think. How about that? Yeah, sorry, I'm, like, kind of stealing your favorite thing now.
That's okay.
Absorbing into my own, but...
I'm just listening because I'm having fun. you know, and this park, or Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, however you want to look at it, the three things to bring really isn't your normal. I mean, honestly, I would bring friends and family because you don't want to be like 13-year-old Matt, like sitting there and friendless.
Yeah, don't experience it like I did in middle school because you might not have the best memories. But I would say, awesome place to visit with groups, with family especially. And then there's a lot to do here. And it's hard to kind of summarize it because it is so spread out in so many different things.
And a lot of things are free. Except, you know, bring money for Milk Bar.
Money, yeah.
Because you need to get your cereal milk lattes and your corn cookies.
Yes, you do. And then you also need to go to Old Ebbitt Grill, of course. Have an iconic meal. We actually ate and drank very well in D.C., so I'm glad that we...
We haven't even scratched the surface of that, and that's fine, though. Maybe there'll be a special bonus episode in the future.
Maybe. Branching out into the neighborhoods and checking out more culture and other kinds of, you know, activities in D.C., because this is just the very beginning.
And let's see, that third thing. So we got money, friends and family.
Yeah, slash appetite of some sort.
A camera. It can be your cell phone. It doesn't have to be like... huge and beautiful camera, but like there are places to take great photos too. So, but just bring some kind of camera because there's so many memories that like you're just going to take pictures all day anyway.
Yeah.
And what you're going to do is you're going to look through them and you're going to remember you went to that place and then you're going to start researching it because that's what we do. Like we take pictures and then I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about this. And then I just go back and start researching more and try to understand and see what else is in there because that's just what I love to do.
Right, for sure. Also, I think this is another little thing to bring. It's like, well, or a thing, more so a thing to get while you're there is public transit cards, like we talked about, because makes it really easy to get around town.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, it's walkable too, like while you're in and around the National Mall, very walkable, but the train makes it super easy to branch out from that as well.
Yeah, those public transit cards are definitely worth it.
Yeah. I gotta say, it was much nicer spending time in D.C. now that I'm not a socially awkward seventh grader. I learned a ton, I had so much fun, and I left feeling very inspired and very well fed.
This is definitely an all-American city filled with inspiration and history. Plus, it has inspired us to obsess over Netflix shows like House of Cards and Madam Secretary.
Yeah, obsess is an understatement. Best enjoyed, of course, while eating Milk Bar cookies.
You've been listening to Parklandia, a show about national parks.
Parklandia is a production of iHeartRadio.
Created by Matt Kerouac, Brad Kerouac, and Christopher Hasiotis.
Produced and edited by Mike Johns.
Our executive producer is Christopher Hasiotis.
Our researcher is Jesslyn Shields.
A special thanks goes out to Gabrielle Collins, Crystal Waters, and the rest of the Parklandia crew.
And hey, listeners, if you're enjoying the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people like you find our show.
You can keep up with us on social media as well. Check out our photos from our travels on Instagram at Parklandia Pod and join in on the conversation in our Facebook group, Parklandia Rangers.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
And as always, thank you for listening.
Man. Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.